Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money, our KPCW show about making money, holding on to it, investing it wisely. This is Larry Warren, and I had two good omens this morning. One was a bull moose came out of the woods, and I got to enjoy that for a few moments. And then when I got to the station, Doug Wells was back after a two-week vacation. Welcome back.
You don't know what's more rare here in Park City, seeing a bull moose or Doug Wells.
Doug Wells sighting. So glad to have you back, and I want to thank Alex Butwinski for sitting in your chair for the last 2 weeks. Did a fine job. And now we can move on, and we have a fun show today. We're going to talk about internet business and indie films, and we're also going to talk mostly in the first half of the show with gentleman Todd Marks from Consumer Reports. And it's always fun to have the guys from Consumer Reports on because they study so in-depth and so objectively things that you make purchases on every day, and who doesn't make a fast food purchase?
Yeah, most of us try to minimize that, but we still do it more than probably we should.
Absolutely, and Consumer Reports has done a survey of the best and worst fast food restaurants, not just the taste of food, but the service and cleanliness of restaurants, everything else. You want to know about where Americans increasingly go to get their food.
In our second guest, we're going to talk about e-commerce and the effect on local businesses. And just a heads up, this is based on a report done by Google in 2013. So while Consumer Reports is the hallmark of objectivity, this information is obviously going to have a taint to it because it's from Google. But we're going to have Bo Ogburn in as our guest from ProTran PC. And he's going to talk about how e-commerce has helped his business here locally. And then our final guest is going to be Edward Panos from SupportIndieFilmFunding.com. We are, of course, the home of the Sundance Film Festival. There's a lot of passion here about independent films. And one of the big challenges is how do they get those films funded? And we're going to find out about that. So stay tuned. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment.
Will Lefty ever reunite with Dolores? Will Mother Urban leave the curling club for a more respectable line of work? Donating during the KPCW Whodunit Pledge Drive can earn you answers. And these thank you premiums.
The Dew Crew, River Horse on Main, Basin Recreation, Park City Ice Arena, and Wasatch Brew Pub.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. We have Todd Marks on the line with us now, and Todd is the Senior Project Manager for Consumer Reports and their issue on best and worst fast food restaurants and casual dining restaurants, and we'll get into the difference as well in the discussion. Welcome to the program, Todd.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Well, this is quite a survey you conduct, and you must feel mighty full. How many meals were consumed in the course of this study?
Well, this was a survey of Consumer Reports subscribers. So we've been we at Consumer Reports survey our readers about all manner of things, whether it's their theme park experiences, to drugstores, to warehouse clubs and supermarkets, hotels and restaurants. We do the casual dining segment. That's the sit-down places like Olive Garden, Red Lobster, Applebee's. Those kind of restaurants are a little bit higher price point. But we started surveying our readers about fast food and fast casual restaurants. Fast casual includes the likes of Panera Bread and Chipotle and Rubio's, and all kinds of restaurants that kind of are a step up from your typical burger joint. And we surveyed a lot of people, more than 32,000 subscribers who ate a collective 96,208 meals at 65 of the biggest burger, pizza, sandwich, chicken, Mexican, and Asian chains in the country.
Great. And how did you rate them? What sorts of things did you ask your readers to rate?
Well, it's the overall experience, and that's something that we are very big on here at Consumer Reports. It's not just one parameter. What we looked at is, again, the overall dining experience. That would include the obvious taste and quality of the food, the flavor. It would include the value, how much bang you get for the buck. It all includes the cleanliness of the dining area and the speed and friendliness of service. All these things taken together, you know, give you a good hierarchy of the best and worst chains, no matter what your personal preference is. And we do the same thing when we do the casual dining chains, although, of course, service is a much bigger component of that. But these are the real stars of the restaurant category today. Believe it or not, you know, the casual dining segment, as I mentioned earlier, the Olive Gardens and the Outback, they haven't been doing well. They've been struggling since the economy went south. But people are spending money on fast food, and again, increasingly on in the fast casual segment, because again, it's a step up from fast food and gives a little bit more of a quality experience.
So then, can you rate from 1 to 10 or 1 to 20? Did you rate the restaurants? What's the best fast food out there?
Well, again, it depends on what your preference. You know, among the burger chains, the top chains in the country included In-N-Out Burger, the Habit Burger Grill, Culver's, Burgerville, and Whataburger. And among the pizza chains, and this is the second time this has happened in a row, the single standout chain was Papa Murphy's Take and Bake Pizza. Don't know if you're familiar with that chain, but
absolutely.
The thing that
every Friday night I'm familiar with it.
Okay. Well, what distinguishes Papa Murphy's is the fact that you basically custom order your pizza from the crust to the toppings. They prepare it, and you bake it off at home. And it really has been off the charts for now two surveys in a row where, statistically speaking, they were the standout. Now, among the sandwich chains, there's a lot of places bunched up at the top. You've got Portillo's Hot Dogs. You may not be familiar with them. They're a small chain kind of centered in the Midwest. Jason's Deli, Firehouse Subs, Potbelly Sandwich Shop did well. And in the chicken segment, Chick-fil-A was, again, the king of that segment. And interestingly enough, KFC, the big chain, was at the bottom of the ratings.
You know, and that's a common theme that you found.
Yes, it is.
When we think of chicken, we think of KFC. When we think of hamburgers, we think of McDonald's.
Right.
When we think of tacos, you know, we probably shouldn't, but the name that comes to mind because they spend a lot of money on advertising is Taco Bell. So these category leaders actually showed up at the bottom of the stack with consumers. What do you think's behind that?
Well, there's a few things behind that, and you're right. Bigger is not better when it comes to America's restaurants. And what we've noticed, and this is not just an isolated finding, and the thing that makes it compelling is that these are the restaurant's own customers that are speaking. It's not an opinion survey where you say, well, what do you think about McDonald's? No, it's about people who told us about their dining experiences at the chains they go to. So you've got McDonald's own customers telling us, in effect, that they had the lowest quality or the worst tasting burgers of any of the 22 chains in our survey in the country. And so even people eat there because, let's face it, they're very convenient. They're almost on almost every street corner in America. They give you a lot of food, and it doesn't always cost a lot, although it didn't earn top scores for value. But, you know, you're talking about very big companies. Many of them are publicly traded companies, and they don't necessarily invest in the highest quality food. Remember, they're franchisees. They're always, chains like this, the big chains are always looking to attract new franchisees. And if you're too tough imposing rules and regulations and restrictions on your franchisees, you're not going to be bringing in new money to invest in the company. And so, you know, maybe, according to some industry experts, that some of the big guys have kind of not really been enforcing top quality standards and requiring their franchisees to do that. So, you know, again, it speaks loudly, the fact that these big chains from KFC, Taco Bell, McDonald's, and others, that their own customers say, yeah, we eat there, it's okay, but boy, there are a lot of better places out there.
Yeah, in terms of value, a couple of years ago, maybe during the recession, people started, chains started having dollar menus and so on. I see some of the prices are creeping up now. They're $1.19 and $1.29. But in terms of value, what did your readers think of the best places to spend the money and get the most and best for the least?
Sure. You know, and again, there's not always a clear correlation between price and quality. People, just because something is cheap or inexpensive doesn't mean it's a great deal. Because, again, most of these chains did not get really fantastic scores for value. It's kind of like when we rate hotel chains and we look at the budget segment, you know, the low-cost places. People go there because they're essentially okay, but you're not getting a great lodging experience. You go there because it's inexpensive and it's good enough. And that's kind of the case of what we see in a lot of the restaurants. But there were three standouts at the top of the list for value: Del Taco, Little Caesars, and Papa Murphy's.
So two of the three are pizzas. I presume maybe it's because pizza doesn't cost that much to make.
Probably. And, you know, again, these are all, again, relatively inexpensive. But I'll tell you something. The value proposition was quite high at what they call the better burger chains. You know, you've got the fast feeders, you've got McDonald's, and you've got Wendy's, and you've got Burger King, among others. But the better burger segment, some of the ones I've mentioned before, the In-N-Out Burger, the Whataburger, the Five Guys Burgers and Fries, those places, you know, people pay more, but people obviously like it better, and they think it's worth paying more because the quality speaks for itself.
Yeah, and Five Guys and In-N-Out have just moved into Utah in the last few years. They're kind of migrating east from California, and
that's right.
And a new one is Habit Burger also, which has just showed
Habit
up
Burgers
in Utah.
Yeah, it's a relatively small chain, but they had the number one burger in our score, and they were at the top, you know, with In-N-Out. And it's interesting how so many of the top burger places are out west, not here in the east. I don't know what that says, but, boy, I'll tell you, I'm glad some of them are coming this way.
And do you think the market, my sense is it is bifurcating. We're really... the traditional fast, keep it inexpensive, quality food doesn't matter so much is one segment. I think that's shrinking.
You're right. One of the things we found that was truly an astounding finding, in my opinion, was that it used to be that convenience was the primary driver of overall satisfaction with a particular restaurant. But this time around, there was a much stronger correlation between food quality and overall satisfaction. So what you say is absolutely on target. The idea people are paying more attention to the quality of the food that they're buying, and that matters more in this relatively inexpensive fast food and fast casual category. And just to piggyback on that, we've seen tremendous higher satisfaction ratings with these fast casual chains. And one of the reasons they're so popular has to do with when you're looking at society, look at millennials. You look at the younger people out there today. Restaurants are really part of this generation's social structure, and these folks choose to spend less at meals so they can eat out more often. And that's a big driver. And not only that, the fast casual chains are more amenable to allowing customers to customize their products rather than the kind of cookie cutter same product you get no matter where you go, and you can't customize. You want to hold the lettuce or hold the onions or whatever. And that's a big part of the appeal of the fast casual segment.
Well, we are speaking with Todd Marks, the Senior Project Manager for Consumer Reports, talking about the best and worst fast food restaurants. So we talked about, Todd, the best values. What did the readers think were not good deals, the worst values?
Well, in terms of again, bang for the buck, people did the bottom of our list was populated by Burger King, again, a big, one of the 800-pound gorillas, Church's Chicken, KFC, Panda Express, and Sbarro. And Sbarro, I don't know if you're familiar with them. They were primarily a mall-based chain. They've been in and out of Chapter 11 a few times. But they came out at the bottom end of the rating.
Well, when you look at Sbarro's, the food's all out on steam tables. So you don't know how long it's really been there.
Well, again, they did not do well in terms of the taste of their fare and an overall experience. They were really at the bottom.
Now, one dining trend everywhere is fresh and local, locally sourced ingredients and absolute freshest food. Is that absent from this category of dining?
You don't see that as much in this segment of the marketplace. That's, you know, you've got to trade up to kind of more of the sit-down places that give you that experience. But one of the angles that is very big today, as you might well imagine, is the availability of healthful choices. And, you know, some of the better restaurants have a better perception among diners in terms of the number of healthful options they offer on the menu. Interestingly, though, only 20% of Consumer Reports survey respondents considered, this is kind of an oddball fact, consider the availability of healthful menu options when choosing a restaurant. And just 19% of readers said that they ordered a healthful meal during their most recent dining experience. So that what that really tells us is that people talk thin and eat fat. That may be an expression you may have heard. People want to do the right thing, but when they go to the restaurant, they're really looking for an experience, something that they perhaps can't replicate at home. And so they do tend to indulge, even though they say they're looking for healthful food. The statistics just don't bear that out.
So, Todd, that brings up a good point. I know in the last couple years, and I think it started in California, it's really rolled out nationally now, where the fast food restaurants are posting the calories on the menu. Does anything in your survey indicate that has caused people to change how and what they're ordering?
Well, that's interesting. You know, as part of the Affordable Care Act, the health care law, there were supposed to be, one of the links to that was that there was a requirement that restaurants with 20 or more units post in a conspicuous manner the health and nutrition information of the fare, be it on near the point of sale. And I will say that most of the restaurants, if not all of the restaurants in this category, the fast food and fast casual, have done a terrific job of making that information available to the public. Much better than those in the casual dining segment. Now, that said, that whole legislation, that part of the Affordable Care Act, has kind of hit a stone wall, and it has been slow to implement, slow to adopt. But the good news is that these fast feeders do make that available, and there are quite a few chains, notably Subway, Jason's Deli, Panera Bread, Corner Bakery Cafe, where our respondents told us that there were more than enough healthy dining options if that's what appeals to you. So it's a big deal. But you know, when you ask about the ability of does the availability of nutritional information kind of sway people? It really doesn't. The only thing, we did ask a very interesting question. When we say, does the availability of healthful options on a menu kind of convince you or prod you to order, you know, better food that's better for you? 42% of women said yes, but only 28% of men said yes.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
I could have guessed that one. Did you delve deeper on the subject of nutrition? Because I see a couple of fast food chains advertise things that it just makes me want to think they're trying to kill their customers. You've got the Wendy's triple burger with layers of cheese and bacon in between the bread, and you've got, and the craziest one I've ever seen, I think, is KFC has two fried chicken breasts, and they use those as the bun, and then in the middle they put cheese and bacon and God knows what else.
The Double Down made headlines a while back, and then they brought it back for a limited time through this part of this spring or early summer, and it's now kind of like just, it's like the Rib Witch, you know, with McDonald's. They bring it back at intervals, and it gets tremendous amount of attention, whether it be it for, you know, the fact that people are actually eating this stuff or the fact that it, you know, carries such nutritional baggage. But, you know, it's interesting. We did take a deeper look at what the culprits are at restaurants, and you rightly so mentioned some of these standouts. I mean, we've found things, for example, like Firehouse Subs, Sweet Thai Chili, Pork Sub, the large sandwich, 1,500 calories, 95 grams of fat. Now, that, if that wasn't bad enough, the issue is really sodium. And with most of these entrees at a lot of restaurant chains, it's not so much the fat and calories, which are bad enough, but it's the sodium. With this particular sub, for example, they're almost 3,500 milligrams of sodium.
Wow.
That's, you know, that for a lot of people is almost a couple of days' worth. And the same thing was true with a lot of restaurants.
And then they'll say, do you want fries with that?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, and then supersize them, right? So, you know, you have to be very mindful of what you order. Even restaurants like Subway, which offer a tremendous, more healthful options than any other restaurant chain in our survey, and a chain that really has done a terrific job offering healthful fare, they have bad choices too. So you need to be mindful that all menus contain good and bad. And you, if you just look carefully and you're really in, if you're interested in taking a deeper look, you can find the information.
So Todd, your survey was, I was impressed. It's very comprehensive. First off, you surveyed a large number of people. I forget the exact number.
About 32,000.
32,000. And you asked a broad range of questions. And one of the areas that I thought was interesting is the things that irritate people, the things people do not, what you call your gripe meter. And the one that caught my eye, I'll just start you with this one, and then if you want to bring up a couple others, that's fine. But I found it interesting that when somebody's eating at a fast food restaurant, they are bothered if somebody at the a third of the people are bothered if somebody at the table next to them, not at their table, is texting on their phone. Why
yeah,
would they care?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. We've done these so-called gripometers, part of separate surveys, a lot, and we do it about all kinds of things from telemarketers to advertising tricks and gimmicks, and we kind of take the temperature or the pulse of the public. And we started doing this a number of years ago with casual restaurants. What irritates you most about the dining experience? And we got an earful of answers. And what you said about texting, I think, drives a lot of people crazy. But since so many folks do that, it may be an irritant, but who among us isn't guilty of that? But one of the things when we asked in a previous gripometer regarding dining out about what drives you bonkers about the dining experience, it were things like grimy pepper and salt shakers. It was when waiters put their order pad in the waistband of their slacks, or if they start playing with their hair while they're taking orders, or if they're reaching over people to pick a plate up. So, you know, there's a lot of little, it's the little things that add up when you're dining out, I think, that can be unsettling to a lot of consumers.
Yeah, I think my favorite, and it's maybe an only in Utah thing because of the culture here, is especially in southern Utah, which is predominantly LDS, when you mm-hmm. order a beer at Chili's, it comes with a straw in it.
Oh, really? I've never had that happen to me.
And I've never seen that. That's something.
It's just more funny than anything. You know, the other thing that happens with fast food restaurants is they're cycling so many people through that it looks like what your customers gripe about, or what customers gripe about the most is just, the grimy salt shit. shaker and just the just cleanliness, period. It's hard to keep up when you're running that many people through.
Well, that's true, but you know, it's funny. What is more inherently basic and that's going to turn you off to a restaurant? Okay, obviously the food is really no good. But if a place has a reputation as being unclean, or, you know, I'm not even talking about the bathrooms, I'm talking about the dining area, and that's what we focused on. If they're all greasy and grimy, there's food and wrappers and what on the floor, and if the employees don't look like they keep a tidy ship, it's the first thing that's going to turn you off, because, you know, we're so health conscious, or conscious of things, of bacterial contamination and all sorts of things. It's in the news all the time now. So I think it's something we've all gotten smarter about, and restaurants, to their credit, have gotten better, because there were really very few complaints regarding cleanliness. So that's a big step up.
Well, that's good, and we want to thank you for joining us. And I just have one last question, and it's more something that people will have to go to your website to see, and that is just you. And I thought this was very clever. You drive a portable photo studio around to restaurants, buy an entree, and then compare what that entree looks in real life to what they advertise that entree to look like.
Sure, we've done a couple of these stories. We call them Foods Not As Pictured, and I actually was involved in these stories where we say, why is it that in the advertisements, either in print or on television, the food looks so delectable and delicious, and then when you get it home, and or you order it and looks nothing like the picture. It's kind of like airbrushing the supermodel, right? And, you know, we did a whole big story on the food styling industry too, because these products that are, you know, these products are really made to look their best. It can take, like, for example, if you want to show a bacon and egg sandwich on a toasted English muffin, the stylist might have to go through 200 muffins in order to find the one that's perfect shape and that toasted up perfectly. And they use all kinds of things from varnish and polyurethane to all kinds of other stuff to make products look really good. And they can't be deceptive, because that would be a violation of the Federal Trade Commission Truth in Advertising regulations. But, again, they show these items in their best possible light. It's really fascinating, because we've found, and we've done a lot of stories on Foods Not As Pictured, not just restaurant foods, but foods that you buy at the supermarket that are like restaurants that sell their foods at retail. You can buy them, and that don't necessarily match up with the ones you get in the restaurant. So, yeah, you go to consumerreports.org. You can see these kind of fascinating stories with details about the Foods Not As Pictured and how they do it.
All right. Our guest this morning has been Todd Marks, Senior Project Manager for Consumer Reports. Todd, thank you for coming on air with us this morning.
My pleasure, anytime.
Lots of fun to hear about this. Thanks a lot. And now let's take a look at the weather. And we're in for another stormy week. This is getting to be an interesting pattern. Isolated thunderstorms today and tonight with a high of 83. But tomorrow there's a 50% chance of heavy rain and a high of 80 and a 50% chance running through tomorrow night. So don't be surprised if you see a big storm. And next, we're going to talk about e-commerce in Utah with Bo Ogborn from ProTrans PC. So join us for more of Mountain Money after this.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The sucker with the gat poured a slug, but before he could scram, Pop and the other Seamus showed the boob a shiv and sent him over.
Hey, buddy! Do you even understand what you're saying?
No, not really.
Hams. Bid during the KPCW online auction for items like these.
Drain rock from Geary Construction. An overnight stay with dinner at Hotel Park City. Snowcat skiing for two with Park City Powder Cats and Heliski. A film festival package from the Sundance Institute. And custom-made skis from Ramp Sports.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo's been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch Counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Bo Ogborn, a relatively young entrepreneur here in Park City that had the good fortune to be featured in Google's 2013 study on e-commerce and the effect on local businesses. Bo, thank you for joining us in the studio.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So how did you end up, my understanding is Google featured one company in each state. How did you end up being the company that Google featured here in Utah?
You know, they came to me, and I'm not really sure why they picked us. We definitely spent some money with them. But one of the key factors was how successful your campaigns are with them. And I know that we run a very, very successful marketing campaign with Google, and that could have been one of their determining factors for choosing us.
So let's take a step back. You're the founder of ProTrans PC.
Yep, ProTrans Park City.
Park City. Tell us what ProTrans does and how long ago you started the company.
Sure. So ProTrans is a local transportation company. And we primarily transport people to and from the airport. So we do the same thing as Park City Transportation or All Resort Express or any of the other big transportation companies.
Both of those companies have the advantage of having been in business a long time. So
40, 50 years, yeah.
So now you've got to break into the market. And from the Google report, it sounds like you relied a lot on Google. What sort of things did you do on Google to help drive your business day one?
Well, one of the things is they've got a product called AdWords, and you know, I'm not here to promote them, but I will promote, you know, online marketing for anyone. There's a number of different campaigns that you can do, and that's just being one of them. And so when you're looking at a marketing mix, putting together like a new company, I think that online marketing should definitely be one of the driving factors in your business, because most people look at 70% internet searches before they make a decision on anything.
Well, do you think you could have started your company successfully if Google didn't exist, if those campaigns didn't exist, if the internet wasn't in place yet?
I think it would have been definitely a lot more difficult, without a doubt.
Probably would have been relationships with the hotels. You'd have to have that in place.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that when we started, we pretty much gravitated away from that, because within this industry, traditional marketing is sort of falling by the wayside, because people, you know, if I talk with the hotels, how am I going to get the guy who's flying in to the city before he gets to his hotel? And that's kind of the person that we were looking at acquiring, was the person that's coming in, so we can, you know, tap into the market and get both legs of the transportation industry.
So you started with one shuttle vehicle.
I started with, yeah, my own personal car.
With your own personal car.
And this was back in 2010.
And this is not the old days. It was 2010. And now you've grown to a fleet of...
We have, I think this year we're going to have about 18 to 20 vehicles.
Okay. And to achieve that kind of growth, what was your advertising strategy? Was it 50% internet, 100% internet? Did you put all your eggs in this basket?
Yeah, this is a very good question. So I had actually been involved with online marketing before with a couple different companies. And we went pretty much all in, probably 80-85% based just strictly on internet marketing, whether it was Google or you know, advertising with Yahoo or other different online avenues.
Do you have any stats on how people are finding you and why they're picking you over the big gorillas in town like All Resort and
sure,
and like Park City Transportation?
Right, and All Resort, you know, one of the great transportation companies of Utah. Why they come to us is because we offer professional, affordable transportation. So we're going to give the same level of service as All Resort Express, and we're about 40 to 50% of the cost less than they are.
So give us an idea. What is a ride to the airport go for?
With ProTrans, it is starts at $89, and that would be a private SUV to the airport or from the airport. That's a one-way price. With other companies, it can be up to double that. And, you know, then you get gratuities and stuff like that. It
right.
just gets super exorbitant from other companies. And we try to be that affordable option with the same level of service.
So one of the things I was surprised in the profile that Google did on you, and they did, as I mentioned earlier, one company from each state, is you not only use them to bring customers in the door, but you use a lot of their tools for your back-end services. And I think that might surprise some people to know about some of Google's back-end services. What do you use Google for in the back end?
So as far as communication with our drivers, if we do anything online through any sort of Google app, like let's say Calendar, it can be instantly networked into our drivers. We can share all that information, you know, seamlessly with our drivers so they know exactly what's going on instantaneously. So if we need to update a traveler's manifest for arrival time, their flight number changes, they miss a flight, anything like that, you know, I can say, hey, Cindy, you know, and shoot it directly into her cell phone. Or, you know, if I need to communicate when I'm on the road directly with my office, it's instantaneous. It pops up, changes in an instant message basically into the office computers. And there's a number of different, you know, products like that out there, but we've found that the Google suite of products is pretty phenomenal.
And can you integrate road conditions and whether it's maybe best because there's a wreck on 80 in the valley
well,
to go around the belt route
do,
or
yeah.
something?
Yeah, you can do all that with the help of UDOT Communications as well. Definitely, you can provide any sort of update that you would want to pretty much anyone who shares your sort of system with, and it's I could share everything with you guys if I wanted to.
Now I'm curious. So Google came along at a time when Yahoo really owned internet search, and the world did not need a new search tool at the time. Everybody was happy with Yahoo. Do you use Yahoo for anything at this point?
I don't look at Yahoo anymore. I used to in the 90s when I was a kid.
That's
without
you know,
a doubt.
That to me is what is so impressive about Google is they came up with a better way to search the internet, but that's not where they stopped. I mean, they have so many tools and services, and businesses like yours are the great unsolved challenge of the internet. It's called the last mile.
Yep.
And Google is desperately trying to figure it out. In fact, I have no information on this, but my prediction is Google ends up buying Yelp. Let's see if that happens. You heard it here first. Why? Because I think Yelp is quickly figuring out part of the last mile of the internet, and Google is figuring out other pieces of it. Yelp's already a publicly held company, so it may not happen. But back before they went public, that was my thinking.
Yeah, we're involved with Yelp as well. We work with them too.
What about Google's customer service for you? You're a customer. I think of interacting with Google just online all the time.
Sure.
Do you have a service rep that you can call up and say, hey, we're having trouble with our calendaring tool?
Another great question, yeah. So when I started doing all this, I started working with the internet back in 2005, and there was nothing. It was like the wild, wild west. I mean, you could go out there and you were trying to figure everything out yourself, which was a great way to learn. But now they have dedicated service reps for every possible question you could want to answer. You call their 800 number, you're on hold for 20 seconds, and they pick up. I mean, there's a reason why the company's worth $1,200 per share. You know, it's a pretty remarkable thing. If I'm having a problem with AdWords, I can call them. If I'm having a problem with my Gmail account, I can call them. I would suggest for any young business owner to start with some sort of online marketing campaign. I personally, just from my taste, I would definitely go with Google. But you know, there's numbers of different ones that you can go with, and it doesn't matter if your budget is $15 or $20 a month. You can still attract new customers with a low budget, or if your budget is $10,000 a month. And you know, we have found that with Google, we get close to a 17 to 18 to one return on each dollar spent.
Wow. I was going to ask if you're comfortable. How much do you spend during the season? What's your peak month that you spend with Google?
Thousands of dollars. You know, a lot of money in the wintertime it gets spent through online marketing. And it's not just Google. Yelp, Bing, Yahoo. We do have a Yahoo account, so we spend it all over the place.
Well, Bo Ogburn, thanks for joining us. From his own car in 2010, you've built a transportation company with now in the teens of vehicles, mostly through help from, exclusively through the internet, pretty much.
And Larry, I know we're wrapping up, but I just want to share with our audience, you're a young man. I mean, we're on the radio, folks can't see. So you started in 2010. How old are you today? Because I think it's inspirational for folks.
I'm 34. And this is the third company that I've owned.
Okay.
So if somebody's looking forward to being an entrepreneur, just do it.
So you started when you were 30. So 30's not too old. Bo, thank you for joining us this morning. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a minute.
The Local View, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. This is Randy Barton, usually your host, but I am off this week, and the fabulous J.W. John Wells will entertain you and inform you. Guests every day. Local news from our news department, national news with NPR, international headlines from the BBC, sponsored by Mercer Automotive, Heber Valley Tourism, and Alpenglow Solar. Thanks, JW, for filling in.
Hello, this is Kristen Egan of Park City Realty Group, and I support KPCW. Every day, I listen to and especially appreciate local news and weather. This has helped me live, play, and sell real estate in the Park City area for the past 14 years. I can be reached at 435-714-1067.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, lrw-law.com. Park City Nursery, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studios with us now is Ed Panos from SupportingIndieFilmFunding.com. As I mentioned in the opening, that's really a way for local independent film producers to actually fund their films. It's very expensive to produce the film. So Ed, give us a little bit about your background and why you decided to focus on this area.
So I'm a venture capitalist by trade, and so I'm in finance. And my niece had come to me with an idea of helping out indie films with social media and directing them to Kickstarter and to Indiegogo. And I said, why would you start a big campaign and direct it to those guys and let them profit from it? Why don't you just start, you know, something that's similar, a crowdfunding site that's specific to indie film? And so out of that kind of blossomed IndieFilmFunding.com, which is... It's similar. It's a crowdfunding website specific to indie film and indie music.
You know, it's interesting you bring up Kickstarter. Very few people know this now because it's mostly about funding gadgets and things that people want. But back in the day, the way Kickstarter got started was with artists. It was with musicians and specifically also independent films getting that started, but they've lost their focus on that, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're very successful. So you're going back to the roots and saying, look, if we want to get independent films funded in a crowdsourced way, let's have a site that's what we do.
Yeah, it's a little different than the way that they did it. And I agree with you, they've lost their way. So when you're an indie film and you go onto Kickstarter or Indiegogo, you get lost in the crowd. And not only that is they don't help you at all. They provide you with a platform for you to go out there and do all the work to bring the people in. So basically they're a credit card transaction place. Whereas IndieFilmFunding.com, we actually go out there and promote and help bring traffic to that indie filmmaker and to his campaign. We've got 193,000 people following us on Facebook since May. So we're about 20,000 below Indiegogo, which they've been around since 2008. We've got 47,000 people that we blast out to that follow us on Twitter. So when an indie film comes and starts a campaign with us, we go out there and we gather our social media and our advertising and we help push the product out there. The last film that that we had that actually came on that had some meat on the bone, I guess you could say, was a film called Big Finish. And it was with, it had Tim Conway and Mary Tyler Moore and a couple of other, Jerry Lewis, a couple of the old folks in there. And we pushed it out to our social media, and we got 1.5 million views on that in one day.
And how much money did your platform help them raise?
Right now it's a little over 50,000.
Okay.
Which is key. I mean, we can only do so much, but the indie filmmaker still has to go out there and beg their friends and family.
But the hardest thing is the first money. So this is some of the first money.
The hardest thing is the first money, and to get your name out there and get it recognized, and that's what we help them do.
So are you judging any of these films? Are you doing any quality control, or is it anybody who has any idea for a film who's welcome?
Yeah, that's a great question. Anybody that has film outside of the adult business can submit a film, and then we review it. We actually, before we post it, we'll give feedback on, one, how they can do a better campaign, what they need to add to their campaign, or if the film is just somebody throwing something up there that's totally awful, we'll just send back and say, I'm sorry, you don't qualify. Now, for judging, sometimes, you know, we pick and we say, okay, here's what we like. Check this film out. And so we do have a Indie Film Fund, the IFF favorite.
So I want to go back to the example you just gave with a film with Tim Conway, Mary Tyler Moore, if I got the names right, and Jerry Lewis. I mean, those are big names. They're names we don't hear every day in the box office anymore.
Yeah, they call them geezer pleasers now.
Oh, that's sad.
I like all those. Mary Tyler Moore is still one of my favorite shows. It's just an uplifting, happy show. They don't make a whole lot of series like that anymore. But, you know, I think it just points to how hard it is for these guys to raise money for their films, because these are big stars, big names.
Yeah.
And if I heard you right, they've raised $50,000 to date. That's not a whole lot of money to, because making a film is expensive. What do you think, and there's probably no average, but if somebody that said, hey, I want to make an independent film, I'm going to have stars like this, and they're probably working on a percent of the revenue, they're not charging what they would normally charge up front. But what should a producer, what should a director think about? Should they think it's going to cost $100,000? Should they think it's going to cost $1 million?
So the Big Finish with those kind of names, their budget was $3 million. But for any indie filmmaker out there, and it's my opinion that don't go onto a crowdfunding site expecting to raise $3 million. Although it has been done by the big names, by the actors that are out there, if you're really looking to, say your movie is going to cost $300,000. Come on to a crowdfunding site, come on to Indie Film Funding, and try and raise $50,000 or $100,000 just to get it started. And then, like you said, the first money in's the hardest. But once they have that, they've got traction, then they can go out and they can sell their foreign movie rights, or they can, you know, attract other investors or private equity to the table. But don't expect to raise $3 million. Unless you're a big name.
And what's in it for those who provide funding through your website? Are they getting just the satisfaction of knowing they helped out a indie filmmaker, or is there some return on investment?
Well, there's two parts to indie film funding. We offer the typical crowdfunding website platform, which is, you know, the indie filmmaker gives away a T-shirt, gives away a signed copy of the DVD when it's done. If you've given, you know, $1,500 or $2,000 in some cases, they'll invite you to come to the set. You give more than that, they'll invite you to be in the movie. But for an equity piece, which we do provide, there's a whole different platform and a back end to that that we provide a contract and a consulting agreement to. And then we can bring in equity players to actually invest in the film. They have to be accredited. They have to be, you know, there's a whole process you have to go through. You can't crowdfund equity right now.
And I would just think that for film investing is about the riskiest, lowest return form of investing there is. I mean, some hit it incredibly big, but there's 99 that don't for every one that does.
Well, we like to say that it's better to invest in a basket, but we do have hedge funds and private equity firms that we have relationships with that like to invest in film. And they do like to invest in a basket of films where they think, you know, it's a typical
venture model, right?
Venture
you got
model.
One hit and 33% aren't going to make it.
Fail, 33% will hit medium and 33% will hit it. But we do have those relationships, and if the film is big enough, we can take it to that level.
Very fine. Well, give us the name of the site again that so people can noodle around on it.
www.indiefilmfunding.com. And we're local here to Park City.
Very fine. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Edward Panos from indiefilmfunding.com. Thanks for joining us this morning.
And hey, thanks gentlemen. For coming in.
And Doug and I will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Pop and Lefty. Cat Dolly down Easy Street to find Lefty's missing true love, Dolores. They get the drop on Big Donor on Deer Valley Drive.
Give it up, Big Donor, or I'll put Rick Broff on you.
Cool your heels, Pop.
Mother Urban,
you're Big Donor?
You gotta get my Dolores back. I'm lost without her.
Easy, Lollipop. I ain't your lost and found.
Will Mother Urban really tell Lefty the truth? Find out during the KPCW Summer Pledge Drive, August 18th through 22nd. Who done it? Who donated? Could it be you?
Additional support for KPCW is provided by our Broadcasters Club, a philanthropic group of community members who are investors in and ambassadors for KPCW. Thank you to our founding silver members, including Andy Bierman and Thea Leonard, Eric and Ann Bloomquist, Bill Coleman, Alex and Catherine Simos, Hans and Sally Fugie, and Peter and Heidi Gatch. For information on how you can join the Broadcasters Club, please call Cindy, 513-2929.
Welcome back to Mountain Money, and I want to thank our great sponsors who bring this program to you every Monday, Park City Realty Group, the Mountain West Bank, Iron Mountain Group, Park City Chamber of Commerce, and Visitor and Convention Bureau, and all that. Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, and Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. Thanks to you all.
You know, that list is growing, so good job to the studio for bringing in new supporters, and thank you to Park City and the businesses out there for supporting the station. We couldn't do it without you, and we also can't do it without the support of listeners, and I understand we've got a pledge drive coming
up. Well,
we
do. A week from Monday. Do I have that right? A week from today. Really? Oh, my gosh. It's sneaking up on us. Yes, a week from today, pledge drive. This is 25% of the operating revenue of KPCW comes from listeners during our two pledge drives, and it is critical support. And as I've been bragging, we've been nominated as non-commercial station of the year in America. So we are kind of think we're doing a pretty good job here, Doug.
You're down. That list is what, the only 10 radio
five,
stations?
Five stations
five,
have been
five
nominated
stations
out of 4,000 in that category.
Wow.
So we appreciate your support, and just think of what we could do with even more. So we would appreciate your support next week during Pledge Drive. And Doug, enjoy having you. Doug is one of the great volunteers who brings in his expertise and helps make this station go. More than 50 volunteers keep us on the air.
Yeah, and you see most of the volunteers during the pledge drive. My kids and I work the phones during pledge drive, and I know there's a lot of folks here in town that are very involved. It takes a lot of work to do it, so thank you to everybody.
And there's still room to volunteer. If you have time, please give Ethel at the station a call, and she can put you in a phone answering slot. In this time period tomorrow, Chris and Nell will have This Green Earth. So join them for that. And Randy's taken a few days off, so JW, who also hosts two of our public affairs shows on a volunteer
we're
basis.
We're keeping them busy this week.
It's becoming a full-time job for John Wells to be here at the station. Just one of those great volunteers who keeps us on the air. So our guest today, we want to thank Todd Marks. Interesting discussion about fast food.
Consumer Reports always does a nice job, don't they?
We have a nice relationship with Consumer Reports and consult with them frequently when they have interesting topics. Also, Bo Ogburn from ProTrans Park City talking about how the internet has helped build his business. And then Edward Pantos, who is using the internet to help indie filmmakers. So that's Mountain Money for today. Thanks, Doug. And this is KPCW Park City.